This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in, Sabres Live. We have one more day until we celebrate Razor's induction into the Sabres Hall of Fame tomorrow. It's a practice day for Buffalo in advance of the matchup with Nashville as part of the homestand that continues game two of that. With Marty, I'm Brian. Lots to get to. Lots of guests today. Shayna Goldman's going to join us real soon. And then Darren Dreger at the bottom of the hour. Martin, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Obviously, quick thought, about what happened in D.C. today. Having flown into that airport many times, and hearing when they talk about the tragic loss of 67 people today, 64 on that plane and 7 on the helicopter, and my son being at West Point, and then they brought up the last time we had a passenger plane crash in the U.S., a commercial plane, and it was in Buffalo, in Clarence Center. A lot going on, so obviously I'm sure that there's a lot of people scrambling. So we're thinking and obviously praying for all those families affected.
Incredibly heavy day, and especially when you think of it in the context of the figure skating community and the lives lost in that crash, and how small and connected that community feels, even with its global counterparts. Like, it's just a small world to live in, and we feel that way every day in the hockey world too. Mm-hmm. And then when you mention 2009 and Flight 3407, it's community, and it's small, and it's impactful, and it hurts. And
Go back to 2011 when the locomotive plane crashed happened in the KHL. Like, when you're with your team, you're with your people, often you feel like, hey, you think, you're kind of in a group. You're with the people that support you, that all of it. And when it happens to these communities, like the U.S. figure skating community, I mean, a lot of the people on that plane were up and rising, right? They had a development camp. It's obviously affecting a lot of people, not just those in the planes, but other people that are in and around that. It's pretty tough.
Undoubtedly, anyone connected to figure skating here in Western New York would know people that were involved in that tragedy. So our hearts are with them. Sabres are getting ready for Nashville tomorrow. Amherst played last night, had a 7-4 win over the Comets. If you want to know one reason why I love Michael Leone as head coach of the Amherst, I would encourage you to go to amherst.com and listen to his post-game presser last night. He had to stop himself multiple times in the sense of, like, you probably think, I'm mad about this, or we lost it, or whatever. Like, he was unaccepting of how they won the game.
Yeah.
And promised that today would be a hard practice with increased competition, which is really interesting because it's in the middle of 3 games in 4 days. And
they got tomorrow and Saturday, and then 3 guys are flying out to Coachella. Like, it's a busy time for them.
Yeah. First 2 periods weren't great, in his words. Didn't like our game at all, his words. And on and on and on it went.
Remember when I said
he has a great demeanor with how he delivers those words, and that's why I would encourage you to watch it. It's not a ranting. It's not a condescending. It's not a. It's never personal. It's just. It's a reminder, and he's very good at reminding. And was even asked about, like, well, how are the players going to feel if you're saying this about the game? He goes, the players know. I'm processed before results. I go in there after losses, and if we've been doing the right thing, they're going to get nothing but bouquets from me for doing it the right way. And so I love that there's a very open understanding of how he coaches, and I can't wait to see how they respond in back-to-back against Syracuse, a much different and much more difficult opponent in back-to-back games this weekend.
I'm happy because it kind of gives me a great pleasure to know that other people can look into a win and say that was a bad win. And if you remember, I said that on a post-game show a couple of years
famously,
as our producer for the home games, Joe Pinter, was like, what are you saying? It's a bad win. And then now it's my kind of an inside joke, a running joke. He'll be like, speaking to me in my earpiece and be like, Marty, was that a good loss, a bad win? What is it? Like, he's always trying to twist it around. So the Amherst yesterday could probably say that was a bad win. It was a win. It was 7-4. But it is not the way you're going to continue playing and hope to have success. Utica is not a good team. So they were able to kind of get away with a lot of things. But so Michael Leone probably could have said that after, and I would have probably posted it on social media because that's my saying.
They did get, obviously, another touchdown's worth of offense from a variety of skaters, not the least of which was Isaac Roseanne, who's tied for 4th in the league in goals now with 20 as he gets set to head to the All-Star Classic again. Anything more that you would add to our discussion about Roseanne earlier this week and maybe on the heels of, where Scott Wheeler as the Sabres, Scott Wheeler from The Athletic, annual guest with us every year as we get set for the draft. He has consistently, expectedly, had the Sabres in the top 10 and very high as far as their prospect pool in recent years. Right now they're 11th, which is still super fine. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it and just what you think of, the Sabres prospect pool now based on how the current roster is constructed and what that means for opportunity, if any, for guys like Roseanne in the near future.
Well, I think the prospect pool has always been strong with the Sabres, the scouts and development teams, and Kevin Adams have done a great job to make sure that they're getting the right players. Even last year, drafting a player like Konstantelainis, and we look back to, when they wanted J.J. Paterka and the 3 first-round draft pick that brought in Yuri Kulik and, like, all of this, right? So it is a big feather in your cap to be able to have the prospect pool. But now we have seen, last year they traded Matt Savoy. Why? Because, we need to add some pieces. So the fact that they still have a very high prospect pool is good. How does that translate to getting success in the NHL? That is the challenge, right? And I love that Yuri is playing top line center. I love that Isaac Roseanne is having success in the AHL. It doesn't always mean that it's going to translate to the NHL. So they have to get that opportunity, but it's a lot more fun to have that opportunity in a winning environment than in a team that is last in the Eastern Conference right now. So that's the challenge that is presented to those prospects and getting that opportunity.
like if and when he Roseanne does get a second opportunity up here, where would you envision a potential spot for him?
I'd love to see him be able to get an opportunity in the top six, and not just an opportunity one game, like an opportunity of a couple of weeks of saying, hey, you're playing top six role here. We've seen like Tyson Kozak playing a top six role. Was this because there was injuries and illness? And yeah, but he still got an opportunity to play with Cousins and Tuck. What would Isaac Roseanne be able to do with that? Now, we all know Jordan Greenway is going to come back at some point here, and that is going to take another roster spot. So it may complicate things a little bit, and the fact that Rochester is having a great year, you want to give that a chance as well for that opportunity for the Amherst. But if you wanted to give Roseanne an opportunity, just like Yuri's getting that opportunity right now to be consistently in a top six role. It wasn't like that until he got moved to top line center. I'd like to see Roseanne being given that opportunity and see how he responds to that.
As far as the practice configurations today, not expecting anything different, and it certainly doesn't look like anything different than what we saw in the lopsided win against Boston. So you would assume same.
I would assume same. I would assume that the way that the game went against the Boston Bruins is exactly what the Sabres want to do. The offense was there. They played well defensively. Everything was there. You don't change anything unless there was a player that was sick and returning and it's a veteran. But right now, what you're getting is what Lindy Ruff has been wanting from this team. Your top line is performing great. Cousins is playing well defensively. He was able to counter Pasternak. That was great. And then everybody else falls into line after that.
Rob Ray, Hall of Fame night tomorrow. Nashville is in. Doors open at 5. Ceremony at 6:05. You'll see it on MSG if you can't get there. First 10,000 fans in attendance to receive a commemorative pin set. Go to sabres.com/tickets. Shana Goldman with us a little earlier than usual on a weekly basis, so we're super excited for that. Hi, Shana. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. I'm great now that I'm here.
Oh, Mammoth. Happy to have you.
I'll try this again. Mammoth, Hockey Club, or Wasatch? What's going to be the Utah name?
She None. Wants Yeti. She wants
no, I,
Yeti.
No, you know what? Yeti,
Long
I'm
gone.
I'm,
there's only three.
I know.
Yeti, I wasn't even that sold on. I'm going to be honest.
Oh.
I liked Outlaws. And this is me being selfish as someone who has to write around these names constantly. I cannot stand these collective noun names that are so awkward to phrase. Then again, anything will be better than Utah because you're writing about it and you're like, everything you change around the phrasing and you don't want to say Utah 300 times. Like I thought I was done with this after PWHL season one. If I had to choose of those, I will choose Mammoth, I guess. But can it be the Mammoths?
It can't be Mammoth because the Colorado Mammoth are a lacrosse team and that's the Mammoth and it can be that. And Duffer, you would kind of back me up on it being the lacrosse fan that you are. So.
Yeah, but the problem is nobody knows about them. So I don't think it would be a big problem. And there's tons of overlapping nicknames in sports.
There is.
I'm just saying they are unique.
I don't like it.
I would go with
Wasatch.
I don't
like any of this.
I would go with Wasatch because
I had to Google it. I didn't know what that was.
It's the mountain range.
Right? I like the idea.
It's like a low point in the mountain range. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I felt like they had other cool, like Fury originally. I was like sick. You're on to something. Outlaws. Like, could you imagine like a cool vibe? And I'm thinking like maybe it's because of like the Vegas of it all. You're thinking of like the intro and the decorations. And I'm like, oh, that could be really, really, really cool. I don't know. I'm a lot disappointed in these names.
I'm sorry to say that, but I heard Ryan Smith talk on a TNT broadcast about 2-3 weeks ago, and he was talking about he loved the way that it says Utah across their chest and that it's Hockey Club right now. And he kind of was building up the Hockey Club vibes, and it's our team, it's our Hockey Club, it's HC, it's whatever. Like, the fans love it. So I'm sorry to say, as a writer, Shana, that would be my probably prediction, is that it would remain the Utah Hockey Club at the end of the day.
You know what? The name goes hard. When they first put out that list and Hockey Club was on there, I'm like, I'm into UHC, like Utah HC. I'm like, this is cool. It's giving like this cool footy vibe. I really like it. And then as I've had to write about them, I'm like, kill this. Get rid of it. I don't need to see this hockey club. Because it's written, like, what do you say? Like, the hockey clubs. And it's like, if it becomes the official name, I think that's how we're going to start phrasing it, right? Like, HC apostrophe S, and just write it that way, and that'll be fine. I'm being selfish here. But if you have a logo and it doesn't just say Utah and they make that their branding, like, go off, right?
Do you think they're losing out on a lot of money if they don't have a rebrand, new jersey, new logos? Because that was the thing. Let's have a temporary logo jersey.
Well, they'll
for
have
year
a logo.
One.
They will have a new logo, yeah, even if they stay with hockey club. Yeah.
Well, okay, but like new jerseys, do you think they would just completely change it, or do they like what they've got enough to stay close to it? And maybe they're losing out on a lot of money that the rebranding to a name if they were to stay with hockey club.
Oh, yeah, totally. Look, at the end of the day, this is a business. Why do so many teams go for the postseason when they have no shot at doing any damage? Because you get round one revenue, right? Like, that, it's business 101. They should absolutely do it. If you want to keep this as a third jersey to, like, stay in touch with your roots, I have no issue with that, right? It's cute, it's simple, and it works. But you're going to do something with the primary logo. You're going to make a ton of merch with it. It's going to be hats. It's going to be cups. It's going to be jerseys. And it makes a ton of sense, right? To have the logo and really embrace it. And there's a way to do it that's really cool. Like, think of Washington when it was, what, Washington football team, right? Yeah. And they had just the W as their, like, that was sick to me. And then obviously now that it's the Commanders, it's a little bit different. But, like, I wouldn't have been upset if they kept that original branded jersey as a third jersey, because it's like a new, you're turning over a new leaf, and you're keeping that with you.
I like football team, by the way. I thought it was cool. And the fact that that organization had been around for a long time, like, you go back to, hey, we're the football team. Like,
yeah,
if Green Bay decided to call themselves the Green Bay football team, I get it, the Packers, but it's like, it has an original old vibe to it.
100%, 100%. There's a way to do it. I think we just all have to, like, get a little more creative with it. And I want to see how it would get branded and how it would be, like, because they can't trademark Utah, right?
Yeah.
You can't trademark hockey club. So I'm curious how they would, like, navigate that situation as well. Like, is it just the three words put together is the only way to do it? Or if it's UHC, like, maybe.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Ducks are back. Trevor Zegras, his presence has seemingly spurred on the offense. They have scored 16 goals in their three-game winning streak. What do we think of that?
You know what? It's funny. When you look at recent scores around the league, there are two teams that really jumped out to me with high-scoring games. The Nashville Predators, who allowed, I think, six straight in three games, and also before that, scored six straight in three games, and the Ducks. I think it's great and wonderful, and I think it's coming at a pretty good time after that Silverberg story came out and some of the comments about Greg Cronin, which, you know, there's a little bit of concern. I think earlier this year I had the Ducks on my concernometer because I was worried about a lot of their young guns not taking the step forward that you expect to see, and I understand why they tried to instill a little bit more defensive structure. It's a natural progression, right? We saw it with the Sabres last year, too. You have to find a way to balance it, but you don't want it that added defense takes away from what makes this team so special. And when you look at guys like Zegras and Terry and McTavish and Leo Carlson, the offense is such a key part of it. So the fact that they're clicking now, I think, is very encouraging, that they're not just winning the games, but they're staying in games. And I think that's so important. You want to play meaningful hockey. And I know there isn't a huge chance for them in the West, but just to make the race a little bit more interesting and capitalize on what's going on with the Canucks, like, there's a moment if you can take it and run with it. And I hope they keep doing it.
Is Zegras getting traded, though? Because, I mean, there's still a lot of interest in a player like Trevor Zegras around. And I would think Anaheim would want a pretty good return, significant return, if they were to do that.
Yeah, they walk a fine line in this situation because they obviously should try to do something to reclaim some of his trade value after the injuries have held his game back. And, you know, no one's had the chance to see him rebound and become that offensive star that we know he has the potential to be. But also you don't want it that it doesn't happen and then you're selling completely, totally lower. You lost any potential, you know, return on that. I think the big thing is whoever acquires him or if the Ducks keep him is just recognizing what his role and ceiling is, right? Because there's nothing wrong with being a complimentary star to a franchise cornerstone, which I would view Leo Carlson as. On a good team, Troy Terry is not their best player. On a good team, he's number two or number three, which is a perfect role for him. And I think we're seeing the same progression for Zegras. I don't think he has that same potential to be the guy, but I think he could be the secondary to the guy and make for a very strong top six. So I'm so curious how other teams are going to start viewing him, especially if he can keep up this offensive pace.
Yeah, Mason McTavish's name is very interesting in all of that, too, because they need more numerically, statistically speaking, but I'm not sure I can imagine them trading him at this point, but there will undoubtedly be teams knocking. We haven't talked to you since the Rantanen deal, so you have a one-word reaction? Maybe what
one
your
word?
Friday night reaction was to that?
Let the nerds cook. That is my true thought here, because you look at the three teams that did this, and it's three first-time general managers, which I think adds even more heat to the situation. But the two who I think make out the best in this, Colorado and Carolina, are run by nerds in Chris McFarland and Eric Tolsky. Oh my goodness, is this a bold trade? I really hope it changes the trade market. But Chicago, yikes. Oh my God, yikes.
Yeah, the nerds in Chicago, I feel like that is just, I get it, money-wise, you lose the Taylor Hall 6, you get a 4.9 of Rantanen, get a third-round pick, whatever. But, I mean, you're facilitating other teams around you to just get, and I'm not saying like Colorado's not getting better, but Colorado got Marty Natchez. It's like they couldn't re-sign Rantanen, so you allow Colorado to get Marty Natchez, and then you allow Carolina to be much better. Do you think Rantanen signs with Carolina at the end of the day, though?
And like you said, too, you're facilitating this trade. To me, the trade doesn't break down if Chicago says, we actually want a second, third round pick out of this because we're going to maximize our cap space because this will be our second retention slot when teams like the Sharks are at three out of three, Nashville's at two out of three, Pittsburgh's at two out of three. These are the teams that should be leveraging the cap space this year. So I think it's all the more valuable. Will Rantanen extend in Carolina? If any team is positioned to do it financially, it's the Canes. And I have seen some like discourse on whether he's going to actually be good there and be a fit there. And it's going to be really interesting. I think the fact that they have more time and more runway to figure this out from the team side to see how he fits, for the player side to see how he likes playing in his new surroundings, is going to benefit the situation more than doing this at the deadline where it's just a rush to the postseason at that point. So I am really curious if we see him and if that helps, you know, smooth along this situation a little more.
Shayna, there is five goaltenders that make more than $5 million and less than $6 million on the cap, on the AAV. One of those guys was Darcy Kemper, who had a terrible year last year. Well, kind of is doing much, much better this year. Tristan Jarry is in the minors. Elvis Merzlikins, we don't really know what he's all about. Igor Shesterkin is in a different category. And now Philip Grubauer, who was put on waivers, most likely going to clear at 2 o'clock today. Is this the, like, if you sign between $5 million and $1 and under $6 million, it's the, that's not the the good place to be at right now for goaltenders?
You have to hope not for Washington's sake after they just signed Logan Thompson.
Exactly, a 5.85, so that's a tough one.
It's a really tough one. And Philip Grubauer's game, I thought he was going to be a really good fit for the Kraken. Like, I really liked that initially. I didn't mind the contract extension he got. And, oh, wow, that has aged poorly. Mm-hmm. It kind of felt like the second they signed Joey Decord to that contract this year, which in that, I think it was $5 million on the dot, right, is the AAV for that one. Maybe it's a little bit more, and it's actually in that range, and he's cursed too. But you kind of saw the end of Grubauer's tenure in my mind, and the way that he has played since that's happened, right? He's really struggled when he's starting, and it's not very often. He's not getting those reps often, and I'm sure that's hurting him too. But you can see how much his game has declined. He seemed like a true buyout candidate because there was no reason for this team to have $10 million in a goalie tandem that just doesn't stack up the way you would hope it would at that cost. But I guess they got an early jump on it, and maybe he can reset his game in Coachella and then come back before they figure out what to do with that.
Yeah, the court is exactly $5 million a year on the extension that starts next year for 5 years. So it was 25 for five.
I like it.
An old friend has returned in L.A. That is the inability to score. The Kings have dropped seven of
Drew
nine.
Dowdy, but they're in
Kings have dropped seven of nine. What's going
to
happen out there?
Who is to say? I look at that team and I really do like the Kings minus last night's showing. And I think having Drew Doughty in the lineup is good for someone like Brandt Clark. Like, I want to see a way for them to figure out everyone to fit in, because I think that forward group has limitations, that if you have more active defensemen, I think it's going to help. And I think they can, you know, handle the minutes for guys a little bit differently now that you have three guys that can take on those matchup minutes with Doughty back. But I just look at that forward group, and I think the game against Edmonton was a really good example a couple weeks ago. They can slow them down and contain them, but they still don't have that counterpunch to go up against the league's best. And you look at it and you go, you need one game-breaking forward. You have a lot of really good forwards, right? Kempe, Kopitar, Byfield, those are all very good forwards to have. You need one game-breaker to stack up to some of the best in the West, and they just don't have it.
They've only scored over two goals in two games in the month of January. They had a 5-1 win against Vancouver, which Vancouver was awful, and a 3-0 win against New Jersey. Every other game is either 2-1 or 0. It has not worked out really well for the Kings in January. And they got today to redeem themselves in Tampa. Maybe they score 11 tonight. Who knows?
No, they won't, because JJ played last game for Tampa.
Yeah, Vasi was sick, though, I think. That, you yeah. know, maybe JJ has to play again. I don't know.
I wouldn't want to see him in back-to-backs from Tampa. But it's funny you mentioned that, too, how low scoring they are. Meanwhile, in the month of January, Darcy Kemper is second in the league in goals saved above expected. So you see how they were getting their wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't mean to pick on JJ. The only reason Jonas Johansson was highlighted in my mind was because he was on the wrong end of the Connor Bedard goal the other night. And I'm like, this is not even anything elite from Connor Bedard. JJ just misplayed it, period. That's how I looked at it, but maybe I'm wrong.
That was, see, it's funny you say that, because I looked at it and I said JJ played it just about perfect.
Really? Because
there was a net front pass option, and there was a 4-inch square, like, where the puck had to be sideways to fit between the shoulder, the head, and the bar. And even Kucherov, who was the, I think was the forward killing on the top of the formation, was rushing to the wall because he thought the puck was going to miss the net. Like, it was a wasted shot by Connor Bedard, but it was so good that it found the back of the net. Like, it was crazy. But
Shayna, we know you're on a tight schedule. Thank you for squeezing us in today. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. We have Darren Dreger from TSN coming up on Sabres Live.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.